There we go.
We are back again, and to talk more college football, we have prodigal sons returning home. Rich Rodriguez back at the West Virginia. I know we will talk about that because Brent Rollins, who joins me every week, obviously a West Virginia native, West Virginia diehard fan. So we'll talk about that. But I think the bigger story before we get to Rhett Lashley, Rhett Lashley's joining us in a little bit, which is cool. How did SMU get here? I think is an awesome story, just like we did with yesterday, Spencer Danielson and Boise State. Love to know his thoughts on how we got here with SMU. But Bill Belichick, Brent, I want to know right now, does this work? Is this something you're supporting? Is this something that excites you? Or are you like, heck nah, bro, this is awful?
No. I don't think it works.
Not at all. Why?
Sneaky thing with this. The recruiting part, I actually don't like. I think he can get players to come. Can he get the right ones? Because drafting for him over the past, say, seven, 8 years,
not good.
Struggle bus, and would make struggle picks bus that, you know, against the consensus board where everybody's like, "What are you doing?" That actually wouldn't pan out. I mean, if you talk to a Patriots fan, they didn't pick a good receiver in 20 years. I worry about that more so than like, now can somebody else go get the players and then he coach them and turn them into a, you know, at least winning solid program? Yes. But I have so many questions with all of this.
Well, let me give you some answers.
Okay, let's go.
So here's my thing. He's 72. Mac Brown was 73. The game's not getting any younger, obviously. It's staying the same. He's getting older. So, obviously, there's something to do with that. That's strange. I'm kind of weird. He's like 20-something wins away from being the NFL winningest coach, which I kind of thought that 26
regular
means
season, 14 overall. Yes, I looked at that. I think that mattered to him.
I thought it mattered to him, too. So, I thought that would be something that he would maybe strive for. I think it's going to work, Brent. I think there's something about this. Okay, so here's the thing. So here's to me why I think Bill Belichick can work. One, colleges are ran more like the NFL now. And they're about to institute, you know, basically the salary caps and contracts. That's coming into college football this offseason. February-ish, we'll start to hear more about that. So he knows how to do the business side of the deal, which I think is really, really good. Do you think there's a better defensive mind in the history of the game? Absolutely not. Like, mastermind. Your quarterback play from NFL to college is a severe drop-off, a drop-off of a cliff. So do I think he can come up with stuff that can fool quarterbacks? Absolutely. Do I think he's an unbelievable defensive mind? Absolutely. So that's another reason why I think it could possibly work. His son coaches as a defensive coordinator for Washington. Nick Saban's one of his best friends. Like, he knows what's going on in college ball right now. Like, he's not, you know, he knows the schedule. He knows what's going to go into it. I think it'll be ran more like a business. But, you know, NIL in North Carolina is good. The money will be there. The spotlight won't be there, which is interesting enough. Bill started to do TV, which I thought that was the strangest thing ever. A lot of TV, and I didn't think he would ever like TV. And now he's doing it. So I actually think this could work. I think it could be good. So I thought you'd be on the other side. You are the logical, the smart, the think things through. Like, impulsively, I feel like there's a lot of things that I feel like could be really good about it.
Well, the coaching point that you make is a very salient and great point, because when we think about even picking games now at the college level, for example, is anyone doubting Kirby Smart right now in Georgia, even though they're going to their back, potentially likely going to their backup quarterback? No, because they're counting on the coach part. And even in college basketball, hey, I'm picking Michigan State to win in round one because Tom Izzo. Yeah. He might even win two rounds. I have no idea who any other players are, but I'm going to pick two rounds because that's what Tom Izzo does. So that part of it, I think, matters. The part you brought about his son, is it his son and his sort of posse in a way that come with him, with McDaniels, Matt Patricia, Joe Judge, the likes, those guys? Because if those guys don't come, who's coming to help coach? Because you got this takes a mountain of a staff.
Yeah.
So
and the staffs. This is a big rule change too. And we'll dive into some of these rule changes in one of our shows in the future. But like, there are unlimited coaches now. Football, it used to be very rigid. You only could have this many. And when the cameras and everybody that was watching practice in the media were there, none of those guys came out. And then as soon as the cameras left, all these coaches funneled out. And you've seen for years, like, you know, Saban bring on all these ex-head coaches, whether it be, you know, Butch, former head coach of Tennessee, and Charlie Strong of Louisville, and all over the place. Sark, Lane Kiffin, like all of these guys, like, he's brought on his staff to build and to grow. So I think that's interesting because you get unlimited now resources. It's still got to be approved by the board. But if I'm North Carolina, man, I could go for a young whiz that I don't know what I'm going to get. But I got one of the greatest coaches of all time. And
kind of a why not in a way.
I think it's a lose-lose for North Carolina, or win-win for North Carolina. I think that – you know, if you can get this approved, which I think is the next step, you got a guy that you know he can coach ball. Do you know if he has the relationships? No. I would argue that Cignetti is an older, crotchety guy, but he's a ball coach, man. Like, he is a no-nonsense ball coach in an era where we've got more entitlement than ever. We've got more kids that are having their hand out. I think development is going to be a bigger piece than it has been. And so I think that's part of it. What you get with Belichick is, even if you don't have the better players, you have the better coach. In every game you go into, I feel like you would really, really have a chance. So if I was a North Carolina fan, I think I'd be excited. And I think I'd be hopeful.
The other part with this to me, that's just fascinating, that I would love to know, that I'm sure might come out maybe. Did the NFL just universally say no? That we're not going to let you come in and run it how you want to run it. You're just going to, if you want to go.
Or did he say no and say, I want to be the GM? You know, because that was his thing, Brent. He wanted to do that. And quite honestly, you're right. He stunk at it. I don't think he needed to do that part. I think he would have been better off without it. But this dude has more Super Bowl appearances than anyone ever, more Super Bowl wins than anyone ever. In the history of the game. And he's I'm going to go try college. And maybe it's the sentimental thing, because his dad coached at North Carolina. So I know that there's some ties there when he was a wee little
man. His dad was a college coach for a long time, too.
Yeah, so
Navy.
That's part of it, too.
Austin's excited. North Carolina fan. One season of 10-plus wins in the last 20 years. Can't get much worse. Why not, right? That's kind of the feeling there. Love Belichick. New Tar Heel fan.
That's interesting.
Might get a new fan base.
Yeah, maybe. I think that the sad part about him, he also had the goat at quarterback for the last 20 years.
Don't bring that up.
Somebody else said. I don't want to.
I know your feelings on that, so I won't go there.
I don't want to derail the show. But Tom Brady isn't Tom Brady without Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick isn't Tom Brady.
It went in Tampa.
With a team ready to. Hey, if Peyton Manning played on all of those Tom Brady teams, Peyton Manning would have all of those rings. Not gonna go there, Brent. Don't do it. And either way, the GOAT is Patrick Mahomes. If you want to talk about the GOAT at quarterback. Yeah. That dude's the best to ever do it and the best to ever play the position. If you really want to get into it, the longevity's coming for him, but winning with less, doing unbelievable things that we haven't seen, the feel, the unbelievable nature of his business. But Brent's my neighbor, one of my best friends. He knows exactly what that was going to do to hit that button and show that. And
I hit the button a little bit there.
God.
But the other part about this, the fascinating part is, what did we talk about all offseason last year? College coaches are going to leave and go to the pros. It's becoming overwhelming, and they're looking at the lifestyle of the pros. And then the greatest pro coach of all time says, hey, I'm going to go coach in college. Like, complete opposite. So that to me is also, it's just, it makes it more interesting. That's for sure.
Yeah. And there's a reason. The reason is recruiting. Like, all these coaches, they wonder about the lifestyle. The lifestyle is 24/7. Now, listen, guardrails are coming. I'm telling you, this offseason,
structure.
There will be structure. Listen, there'll be contracts. Like, these kids will now come out of high school, and it will be determined how many year contracts they're signing. But there's going to be contracts, which leads to less tampering, which leads to less NIL. The collectives, by the way, in college football will go away. That will disappear. There will be punishments probably for people that dabble in that. Like, there's so much that's going to change. And I don't think we're ready yet for AFC, NFC with Big Ten and SEC because of the other sports. The reason it hasn't changed is because the other sports are still involved. You've still got basketball. You've still got baseball. You've still got other things, I think, that stop the total fragmentation of this, of getting off and derailing. But yeah, like, if you had the list of things, Brent, that I would never thought of would have happened, Bill Belichick being a head coach in college football. Never in a million years did I think that was even remotely possible.
Some might say he actually is a very good recruiter, given who he hangs out with and his current significant other person.
I had a guy tell me a long time ago, and I'm not going to mention his name, a famous head coach. I was like, how do you know if somebody on your staff is a really, really good recruiter? He said, I look at his wife.
I mean,
that's like, if he's got the mouthpiece to get a fine honey, like, that's part of the deal. So
he can sell.
And but with the new coaching changes too, you can allocate people that are just recruiters now, and you can have guys that are just ball coaches. Again, that rule passed this past off season. So it was a big deal with coaches, because it's going to get coaches off the road a little bit more, which I think is something that people want.
So what did you think of the prodigal sons returning? Rich Rod at WU, Scott Frost at UCF.
Scott Frost obviously makes a ton of sense. I kind of like this quote, by the way. Scott Frost said, sometimes when you're climbing the ladder of success, he said, you don't stop and wait with what you're happy when you're happy. And you keep going to pursue, and a lot of times it doesn't lead to happiness. I thought that was pretty cool. I think it's a good saying for us. Now, that obviously it's different because he went to his dream job at Nebraska. And failed and came back, but he was successful at UCF. It's a place where it's a different, there's so much recruiting there in Florida. Like, you can throw a rock and hit a guy that can run a 10-500, you know, like, that's
one of the sneakiest great jobs to me in college football, especially now that you have the automatic bid stuff with the conference alignment, with them being in the Big 12 now, because not only do you have the recruiting base, you have the alumni base. Like, many people don't realize UCF is third in the country in terms of largest enrollment. It's like 70,000 undergrads. Number one, by the way, is Arizona State. So some of these schools that, like, they got tons of students, tons of alumni, tons, which typically means tons of money and into the program that could potentially be there. And the location of that, you know, it's not like you're in Miami and you're in the complete South Florida and you're maybe not going to resonate with some of the South Georgia kids or into Atlanta. Like, being in Orlando, go down to Miami, go up to Atlanta, South Georgia, over to Alabama. Like, it's recruiting just central right there. So that's a sneaky great job.
So much speed. So would you rather have Scott Frost, Rich Rod, or Bill Belichick?
I mean, that I think in terms of just sheer coaching, you would always want the best of those coaches. But I think for where each is at, I think each is likely a perfect fit for where each is at, especially Rich Rod at WU. So they're at least not boring.
Talk to me, WV man.
They've been boring and stale for years, and it's just not fun to watch, basically. Well, no, Holgorsen was awesome for for a few years there and brought a lot of fun and energy. Like you had the Geno year, a couple years with him and Tavon and Stephen Bailey. But it's just gotten to the point where, especially with West Virginia being in the Big 12, where you don't play the Syracuses, you don't play the Virginia Techs and Pitts consistently. You got this kind of meh football plus the non-traditional rivals. It just makes it very uninteresting. And that I'd rather watch interesting football.
Rich Rod was so cutting edge and he was so ahead of his time with the spread. Like nowadays, the guys he had, it wouldn't be the same. But he was so far ahead of the curve. Interested to see him, how he evolves and how he changes. Mm-hmm. He had a quote the other day, by the way. I don't know why I'm thinking of all these freaking quotes. But he had a quote the other day that, like, experience is good if you learn from it and if you continue to evolve and to continue to change. And so I thought that was a pretty cool note from Rich Rod.
Still not going to let him forget the 2007 game against Pitt, though. That's still – that one still stinks. What,
wasn't that McAfee's fault or no?
They played very tight in that game. Very tight in that game.
Too tight for your liking. Hey, how about somebody who doesn't play tight?
No.
How about Rhett Lashley? Yeah, my boy Rhett does not play tight. Rhett, I want to know, known you for a number of years, I want to know what Saturday felt like and how much sleep you got, like knowing like what y'all had got to and where you were at, like confidence level and all that, like how I saw how intense you were on the sidelines. Like, is that how you were all night? Was your poor wife like, was everything tense and tight, or were you like, what the heck, let it rip and we can't control it? How were you?
I was good. You know, Saturday was wild. I got sick Friday afternoon. So Friday night at the hotel, I was in bed and I slept in Saturday. I got up, went to our walkthrough at like 11, got a shot from the doc and went back to bed till 4. So I just laid in bed. I don't ever get sick, but it hit me. But good Lord took care of me. About 5:30 when we got on the bus to go to the stadium, I got good enough to go. And so, I was relaxed. I was confident. Our team's been great all year. They show up. They play hard. I knew we were prepared. I thought we'd play well. I know our guys were bummed that we played such a poor first quarter, but I'm intense in general, so that's just how I am. And I also thought maybe some things didn't go our way, and I wasn't real happy about it. But, and then just the way our guys battled when it looked really bad after the first quarter, I was really proud of them. And then, you know, kid kicks it through from 56 at the end, and that's it. It was a quick ending. So, and then we had the 12 hours we had to sit around and wait.
Yeah, that's the part that I imagine had to be the worst.
Yeah, I mean, that was a weird mix of emotions, you know, because you know how it is after you lose a game. It's a process that you go through all the feelings. And
it's like grieving.
Yeah, it's basically you're grieving the loss of a game. And, you know, what was weird is we hadn't lost since September 6th. So that was a feeling we hadn't felt in a while, which is awesome. But then it was just different because you weren't – you're by the time you were out of the locker room, your disappointment that we didn't finish and win a championship game shifted to just your unsettled, probably anxiousness about, like, well, is that going to cost us an opportunity to be in the playoff, or did we do enough? And feeling like we did enough, but just not knowing what would happen.
Man, I think about this team, Rhett, and where you guys are at. Like, a couple years ago, you guys were looking for a conference, and you guys got a proud history. And there's a lot of people that went to your school, that love your school, a lot of successful people that basically laid a foundation and laid a groundwork that said, we're not going to accept this. And you guys might not be in the college football playoff without – a lot of those guys getting together in a room and coming up with money to join the ACC. And y'all took sanctions and penalties and gave away like $200 million to get this daggum opportunity. Like, how cool is that? The people at your university that had your back, that gave you an opportunity to do this.
Yeah, it's special, the commitment here and just the alignment and everybody wanting us to be great at football again. And knowing that if we're really good at football and basketball and in sports, particularly in a conference like the ACC, that it elevates the entire profile of the university. To your point, we have a proud history. I mean, Doak Walker played at SMU. Everybody knows about the Pony Express and Eric Dickerson and all those guys. I mean, we won 11 Southwest Conference championships. Southwest Conference was the conference for a long time. And so, and then we had it all taken away. And I'm not saying that we were right on everything we did at 45 years ago or whatever it was, but it was also the worst penalty anyone's ever been given. And there's a reason they haven't done it again. And so our program had to climb all the way back. And you know, when the Southwest Conference broke up, we didn't get to stay in what is now called power conferences. And so I'd say probably 10 years ago, you know, shortly after probably TCU went to the Big 12 and really went all in on football. And then Gary Patterson, that program he built, you know, I think that helped wake a lot of people up here and go, hold on a minute. Like, if they're doing that over in Fort Worth, we know what we can do in Dallas. It's time to get back at it. You know what I mean? And then it's been just slowly ever since then. There was a few coaches that came and made it a little better. June Jones and Chad Morris, and then Sonny and I came at the beginning of his tenure. And then I'm blessed to be the coach now. But, you know, about 5 or 6 years ago, we just started winning. And the everyone got behind the program. And so for them to give us the resources to get us into this conference, you know, you said it best. We gave up. People keep saying all these things like we bought. We didn't buy anything. We just gave up the revenue for some things to get in, which every team does when they join a power conference, but they don't give up all of it. They usually give up percentages of it. And it's a lot of money that a lot of people that care about this university came together and said, we're going to support this program through the next 5 to 10 years so we can be competitive now. And I think you're seeing the results of that.
So, Coach, you obviously were at SMU as the OC for a couple of years, then went to Miami. What was it that made you say yes to go back to being the head guy? Because obviously it was a good experience that in that time frame for you to say yes.
Yeah. You know, when I came here with Sonny, our first year we went 5-7. And then the second year we got a quarterback named Shane Bichelle, was pretty good. And we went 10-2. And it was the first time that we had won 10 games since 1982, three, somewhere in there. And it was the first time SMU had been ranked since like 86. I mean, we saw what had started to happen. The city was starting to get connected then, the Triple D, Dallas, all the stuff that we use in branding was starting to happen. And I got the Miami opportunity, but I had been here just enough to see what could be and kind of be a part of that beginning. And we really liked it here. I mean, I'm from Arkansas, 5-6 hours away. So Dallas is a good fit for us. And so, you know, go down to Miami and 2 years later when Sonny left and the job was coming open, I felt like I was ready, but, you know, I didn't have to be a head coach if it wasn't the right fit. But this felt right, and my family would be excited about it. And just knowing that the commitment was there, but knowing what could be, knowing if we ever got in a power conference, knowing we could win, knowing the next step was to win a championship and that we were going to have the support and all the things we now have, that's what excited me. You know, now 3 years in, we've done it pretty quick, and that's pretty special.
Well, and it's got to excite you to watch – Mr. Jennings run around, because he's just, he's fun to watch, man. He really is. Dude's electric. I wouldn't want to chase his little bitty behind. And then obviously with the wrinkles that you guys throw in, but I find this very interesting, Rhett. Kevin Jennings coming out of high school, he was ranked the 1,535th player in the country. 1,500. So he was highly ranked. So you are a genius because you knew you beat out Lamar and Missouri State and Sam Houston. Like, for a kid that obviously since he's taken over, but beside the Clemson game, that's the first loss. But so much excitement, so much fun. Like, how did he become the kid we see now in your system? And tell us some things about him that we might not know.
I mean, isn't that what's great about college football? You just rattled off he was the 1,500 and whatever. And, you know, right now he's one of the best quarterbacks in the country. And everybody knows who he is now. You know, I'm just fortunate. Like I said, good Lord had me in the right place at the right time. I'd gotten the job, only had it for like a week, maybe 10 days. I can't remember. It's all a blur. But it was like the first game I went to after being – I got hired around December 1st. So it was probably around this time, around December 10th, 11th. And, you know, South Oak Cliff had just beaten Aledo in the second round of the playoffs, which Aledo wins like – they've won like 11 of 15 state titles. Well, South Oak Cliff had just beaten him. It was a big deal right when I got hired. And everyone started to talk, this might be a DISD school that can win a state championship. Well, there hadn't been a DISD, Dallas Independent School District school, win one in 60 years. So I go to this game at the Star where the Cowboys practice on a Friday night. to watch the third round playoff game between South Oak Cliff, which is Kevin's school, and Lovejoy. And there's talented players on both sides. And, you know, I really don't know what I'm doing. I mean, I'm literally trying to figure out how to be head coach, keep my roster intact, all this. And I've looked on Rivals to find out that the class I've inherited didn't have a quarterback. So I'm like, well, that's cool. They didn't recruit a quarterback. That's not normal. So anyways, I go to this game with our OC, Casey Woods. He'd probably been hired like 2 days earlier. I don't even know. And somebody handed me a sheet, said, hey, go look at this corner at Lovejoy, this linebacker. There's a junior receiver at South Oak Cliff. And, oh, by the way, the quarterback at South Oak Cliff's committed to Missouri State. He's pretty good, but whatever. So I go. So I'm really there, like, supporting Dallas, one of the Dallas high schools, looking at some guys, honestly just happy that, like, I'm just watching football, not dealing with all this new head coach stuff. And, like, a first quarter into the game, you're like, I looked at Casey, I go, what am I missing on this quarterback? Like, he's pretty good, you know? And he goes, yeah, he's real good. And so we just kept watching him, and it was just obvious. He was a stud. He was smooth. He was a quarterback. He was throwing the football, back foot hitting, coming out on time, deep ball, perimeter. You get it out quick. He could pull it down, though, and keep his eyes up when he scrambled. He'd pull his own read and go 30, but he wasn't – you weren't drawn to him because he was a runner. He's just a really good athlete playing quarterback. And then what really was cool is his presence. He'd come off the field, and you could just tell. You know how it is. Like, he's the alpha. Like, these guys follow him and no one else. And, like, when good things happen, they're looking at him, and he's like this. And when bad things happen, they're looking at him, and he's like this. And we offered him after that game. Of course, they went on to win the state championship. And a few weeks later, he visited. But what makes him special, man, it's just his DNA. His parents did a great job raising him. He has got the perfect balance of he's incredibly confident, but he's super humble. Like if you just go out and watch him, he's just like a big kid playing. Like, he's like, we were, I think we were at Louisville, and we had had the lead at half, 24 to maybe 13. They come back, they tie it 27 all in the fourth quarter. And he's over by the water deal, like, dancing to whatever song they're playing in the place. And we're like, Derek looks at me, he's like, are you kidding me? And I'm like, whatever, man, you know? And then he leads us on the game-winning touchdown drive. Like, he just, he'll throw a pick, he'll come off and be kind of like, my bad, and he'll go right back out, and he'll be ripping it the next play. And he just plays with a very cool calmness, but such a confident demeanor that all the great ones have. And it's hard to put into words, but you know it when you see it.
So, Coach, you mentioned De'Eric. I don't know if many people know that De'Eric King is your quarterback's coach that played at Miami after transferring. Talk about the Miami pipeline that has kind of infused your roster, because, yeah. I mean, specifically two guys. What was it about Elijah Roberts, and what was it about Breshard Smith that you said, hey, if these guys get an opportunity here, they can be big-time players, because that's what they've become for you?
Yeah, we had some fortunate insider information because we had been there. Whereas in this portal world, sometimes you're predicting and projecting and you're trying to figure it out. With Elijah, after our first year, you know, getting to know Scott Simon's scheme, I knew he knew what he was doing, and we played with a field six technique in his scheme. And we knew Elijah from our time at Miami because he was on our scout team, and we couldn't block him. And he came in to play DN. They were trying to bulk him up to a three technique. He really wasn't a three technique. I mean, he could be, but he didn't want to be. And so we had the benefit of knowing him. And so after our first season, we had to go fix our defense if we wanted to win championships. So he got into the portal, and Garen, our O-line coach, and I, who had been at Miami, were like, I think Elijah could play here and play that field six technique. Like, we just knew him. And there wasn't a lot of film. And the little film there was, they had put him in Mario's first year, I think, trying to play him at three technique. And
yeah,
it was okay. But, like, I wasn't blaming our defensive staff for not being like, yeah, we want that guy. At the same time, we're like, look, trust us. And sure enough, they did. And he came in, and you talk about a winner. He's one of our team captains. He got more votes than anybody for team captain this year. He's an absolute stud. And he's been a great field six technique for us. He can, you know, do it all. And then, so we had that knowledge of him, though. And then with Breshard, it was the same way. We recruited him. We coached him his freshman year. He was behind guys like Mike Harley and Xavier Restrepo. So, but he was a true freshman, but you could just tell he was
special. As a receiver.
Yes, as a receiver. He was kind of recruited to be that Percy Harvin type player. You know, like, he's a slot receiver, but he can also run the ball. He's like a running back once he catches it. And And we were excited about that. Of course, we didn't get to coach him after the first year, but we did. We played him a little bit as a freshman. We put him in the backfield and flip him a reverse, slide him into the flats, put him on a wheel route. Like, we just get him the ball. And he stayed there our first 2 years here. He stayed at Miami and backed up Restrepo and played. But, you know, he was backing up Restrepo.
And so when
he goes into the portal, we had about 6 or 7 Miami guys on the team by that point. They're like, Coach Bouchard wants to come. And we're like, well, that's great. But every one of our receivers are coming back, like literally every one of them. Roderick Daniels Jr., mm-hmm. at the time, Jake Bailey, who's now been out for the year, but like our top two slot, like we definitely want Bouchard, but we don't have a spot and we don't want to ruin our culture here by bringing him in and ticking off all the wideouts. And so we didn't like say no. We just told him we didn't have a spot for a few weeks, which was weird because we knew how good he was. But Coach Cooper, our running backs coach, finally, he just kept saying every day, like, you know, Bouchard still wants to come. And I'm like, I know, but like, what, where are we? And our receivers coach who had been at Miami, he's like, I love Bouchard, but like, where are we going to? And I've told this before, we were watching the Chiefs because Rashee Rice was playing as a rookie and had played for us. And this Isaiah Pacheco is running all over the place, catching the ball out of the backfield, just a real versatile player. And I text Coop and I'm like, hey, how much does Bouchard weigh? And he texts me back and we realized he only weighs 10 pounds less than Pacheco. And we're like, could he play receiver, running back? He says, let me ask him. He said, hey, you want to come play running back? He's like, yeah. And here he comes. And we didn't really know. We just knew he was a really good player with the ball in his hands. And after the first spring, our defensive staff just said, yeah, that guy's different.
That's awesome. That's cool. How do you, Rhett, like the game's changed so much over the years, and you've been in it for a long time. How do you manage the portal situation? I know parameters are coming. Thank God. Like, thank God soon we're going to have something. Yeah. You're right. But like, how do give people an idea of like, you used to be able to like recruit and be, I can exhale. Like, this is so awesome. I can chill, spend some time with my family. And now all of a sudden your guys are getting recruited like crazy off of your, and you got to re-recruit your guys. Like, talk about how, you know, how you got to build a team now and how frustrating it can be and the challenges that come with it, man.
Yeah, you know, the old saying, you got to worry about the ones that want to be here and not the ones that don't. That's hard to do, though, as a coach, but you have to. And, yeah, it's challenging because you're no longer just recruiting high school kids or some junior college kids. You're also recruiting transfers, and you're also recruiting your own roster. And you're not just doing it, like, one time a year. You're doing it all the time. Like, you're doing it all the time. And it is what it is. I mean, people are constantly calling people on your team and offering them how much is it going to take to get you to leave. And you know, so it in a lot of ways, that all is different. It's changed. It's crazy. It's chaotic. There's not a lot of stability, you know.
So how do you build game. This then? How do you bring them together when you get the – I'll give you this.
Yeah. So – but what's crazy is different as everything is, still the secret sauce hasn't changed. Cause even back, think when you played and when we were playing, like, and then once you signed, you really couldn't leave, you know? And so you didn't think about it cause you couldn't. Think about your coaches that you appreciated the most were the ones that had a relationship with you and you knew they cared about you. And so they could coach you hard. They could be demanding on you. They could hold you accountable if you knew they cared about you. But if you didn't know they cared about you, you know, maybe you respected them back then because they were coach, but it ain't like that anymore. And so the whole, like, you still got to have great relationships, and it's all about that with your players and your staff, have a healthy staff so your team can do that. And you got to bring in the right ones. That hasn't changed. Now, I'll say this. It doesn't matter. We've been blessed the last 2 years. I think we're 22-5. We've won. I don't know what it would be like if you're not winning. I can't imagine. Yeah. Because when you're winning, guys buy into what you're doing. They buy into the culture. They buy into the program. And our guys have. We have a special group that has won 11 last year and now 11 this year. But, like, let's say we're 6-6. You know, last year we won a conference championship and we were going to the ACC and getting a new facility. That sure helps you keep guys on your team. And they were happy. Our guys are happy. We built a good culture because of the relationships. This year we go to the ACC, we win. Okay, we're in the playoff. That helps. But, like, if you're not doing that, I don't – it's a challenge and still a challenge, and you are doing that. So they have to have relationships. They have to trust you. You have to know them. You also have to resign yourself to the fact that some guys are just going to leave if they're not playing enough, or if they're unhappy, or in the worst case, they want to be there, but the people that kind of dictate what they do don't want them to be there. So it's unique, but I think at the end of the day, the only way to do it is to do what we love to do. It's care about the guys, build relationship, gain their trust. They know we care about them, so we can go through those times together.
So, Coach, you had one of those Murphy's Law type games at Duke with the with the turnovers. And outside of learning that Jafari Harvey can jump like a madman and get up and block a kick, what did you learn about your team in that game specifically that kind of helped you finish things out?
What I learned, we do have a mature team, and we're blessed from the guys that came back from last year's team. What I learned is we do have a resilient bunch who, one, they believe they're going to win every game, and they're going to keep playing with the thought that we're going to win. Like, they do. Now, that obviously, like last week, that doesn't always happen, but you saw how they fought at the end. Like, they fully knew we were going to come back and win that game. So they've created that habit and that togetherness and resiliency. I think the cool part was, and to David's point, we're a true team, and the kids deserve the credit. Like, they love each other. They play for each other, OD teams. Like, they compete with each other, not against each other, and that's a fine line. And so, like, in that game, I mean, we were a turnover machine on offense. I mean, Kevin turned it over 5 times. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, at fifth or sixth time, I think I probably said on the headset, he turned it over again. You know, like, and at some point you're like, we're just not going to win tonight. Like, we have given this game away, and I don't know how to make it stop other than for it to end. You know what I mean? And so in all 6 turnovers, they scored 0 points off those turnovers. And I don't see it as much, but all our coaches after the game were like, you guys don't even understand. Like, our defense would come off after a stop, and it felt like 3 plays later, we turned it over on like our own 35. And the defense just grabbed their helmet and run right out there. They didn't gripe. They didn't go, come on, Kev, come on off. You guys get it together. They weren't coming over
the offensive huddle. They were pissed. They just didn't do it.
Yeah. They weren't coming over to the offensive huddle and go, how about you guys figure it out? You know, none of that. They just went out and played. And when it looked like they're about to kick the game winner, they just executed kind of a desperate situation block we had, like, and they just played. And so they have that, and they did that the other night. They weren't pointing fingers. You know, we put our defense in a lot of bad positions in the first quarter, and they scored 21 points because of it. And our defense never flinched, and our offense kept playing. And so they've just had a real resiliency together, and that's what we learned that day at Duke.
Well,
and no matter what the situation, they're going to fight.
Yeah, and I love the way y'all responded last week, because the same thing could have happened. And, you know, strip sack, and they still score a touchdown with a guy downfield, by the way. That rule.
Two guys downfield. Yeah,
two linemen downfield. We talked about it on the show, don't you worry. But the team fought back, and 17 unanswered in the fourth quarter to be right there. What's the first thing that stood out? And I'll let you get out of here, because I know you got better things to do than hang out with us. What's the first thing that popped off the tape when you saw Penn State?
Who? Their speed. You know, you're from the SEC country. I grew up in SEC country. I play in ACC country. Like, there's speed in the South. A lot of times you kind of look at Big Ten teams and go, okay, they're big, they're physical, but they're not as fast. That ain't the case with this Penn State defense now. They can roll. Like, they got a lottery pick, a top 10 pick at defensive end. They got experienced D tackles. They got backers that can run. They got 2 really good safeties. Like, but their whole team speed on defense, like, you'll watch the film against an Oregon offense or an Ohio State offense that you know has speed, and those offenses don't look fast because the defense is just as fast. And so from an offensive standpoint, that's what stood out to me about their defense. They can run. They can really, really run at every position. And then offensively, I mean, they got one, maybe have the best player. Their tight end is unbelievable. And big-time quarterback.
He's not a tight end. He's a quarterback. He's a running back. He's a receiver.
And that's why he may be the best player in the country. Like, there's not a matchup in man. There's not a zone. There's not a triangle in two. There's, like, nothing you can do to feel good about covering that dude. And again, you don't even know where he's going to line up. And, you know, they got a big O-line. They got 2 really good backs, good receivers, an experienced quarterback, and an incredible play caller. Like, they're very multiple. They do a lot to stress you. So that's just – and that's before you even talk about 106,000 at Beaver Stadium. So, Yeah, that's what stands out. They're really
hey,
good.
What do you do for the weather, Rhett? Lone Star Dog asked, like, weather concerns. Obviously, it's pretty gorgeous where you're at, and how do you prepare for that?
We're fortunate, Lone Star Dog. You know, last week we played in Charlotte where it was cold. Well, we had 2 days last week. We go in the mornings, so we're usually on the practice field by 8, 8:15, and we had 2 mornings last week that were in the high 30s. So we went outside and practiced, and we're lucky tomorrow morning we're going outside. It's going to be 40, 41 at 8 o'clock, and so we're getting a little enough this time of year, and we do have a noon kick. So even if it's 30, 35, 40, it's going to be in the day with the sun out, hopefully. That's the best we can do. You know, I don't think the cold weather bothered our guys in Charlotte. We didn't play well at times, but I don't think that was it. And, it's a great question. If we were playing in South Florida, we'd probably be going in the indoor tomorrow, but we're not. So we're going to go outside.
Well, okay. Coach, you've been first class for a long time, always respected you and the way you carry yourself. And there's not a surprise why you guys are here, but we appreciate your time. Now get back to your family and the important things. And, we'll holler at you again soon.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Coach.
All right. Well, that's, you can tell, man, like, easy to cheer for, easy to root for, SMU. And I can't stress enough, Brent, like, they got passed over by Houston. SMU got passed over by Houston to join the Big 12.
Big 12.
Like, SMU had no home, no way to get to a conference, no way and no path to get to this point, except for they got their dudes in a room that back them that are dudes, by the way, like Clark or the Chiefs owner Clark Hunt and company.
I would say dudes some pockets
with some coin pockets. And they gathered up like $15 billion, like this, which is underneath the worth of people, which is underneath the cushions with where they're from. And literally they raised $100 million in 5 days. They joined the ACC, SMU did. And by joining the ACC, they got the credibility. They got the automatic bid. They had access to Miami players because those guys will come play in the ACC. They're not going to play in the AAC probably. But right. That's why SMU is here, because their boosters cared enough about their team to take a hit to join the ACC, a $200 million hit that has said, we'll take care of this. And because of that gamble and getting a coach like Rhett, now they're in the college football playoff.
It's amazing to read his story, too, because obviously he was very much tied to Gus Malzahn, playing for him in high school. But yeah, he stepped away from coaching for a couple years and then – got back into it, wanted the itch to get back into it. I was going to ask you, too, and I don't know if you realize this. Do you know where he played high school football? The name of his high school?
No.
Shiloh.
But not Shiloh Generals.
Not that it was Shiloh Christian School.
Not my Shiloh, because we're about the same age, so that would have been kind of dope if he was on my squad, because we could have used a quarterback.
So we got one more team we were going to look at tonight?
Let's go to Indiana.
Hoosiers.
You know, we talked about Arizona State yesterday. We talked about Boise yesterday. And just, like, it's funny because the path is going to be the same, by the way. If you look at Indiana, Indiana is in the college football playoff because Indiana got a new coach, like Rhett Lashley for SMU, that had a pipeline to their old school. And they brought in a bunch of guys from their old school. That is absolutely why Cignetti and company is here. The schedule was favorable, yes. But to bring in 13 James Madison kids that he knew intimately, like Rhett Lashley was talking about, he knew what they could do, what they couldn't do. He knew what they needed on their squad, and he infused it together, came over, built the right mindset, had the right dudes, and next thing you know, you look up, and they're extremely successful. So that's honestly, Brent, it's the same type of formula.
Yeah, very much so. And Coach Cignetti's record as a head coach. Yes, I did Google it, Coach. It is 130 and 36, which, and many people probably don't realize that, one, by the way, he played at West Virginia. He was a quarterback at West Virginia. Two, he was on Nick Saban's initial staff at Alabama. And, you know, one of the chief responsible guys for getting, you know, Julio Jones and that sort of the starting of Alabama before he went to Indiana, University of Pennsylvania, and then Elon, and then James Madison. But it's the guys from James Madison, and then it's one you always got to have the signal caller. Getting Curtis Rourke from Ohio,
yep,
who played, you know, over 2,000 snaps already, lotted and had, you know, over 1,000, almost 1,000 dropbacks already. that kind of makes it.
And Brent, you just nailed the biggest point of Cignetti. And he said this. This was his big, like, he wasn't going after blue chip guys. Like, they weren't going after the same guys that a lot of these major programs are going after. He said, I wanted guys with multiple years of experience, because when you've played for several years, you play faster. You're faster than you are. Mm-hmm. You've seen it. You've done it. You know what it looks like. So that was a big deal, because when he got the job, he had 19 players in the portal. Like, he had 13 starters in the portal, and they had 30 transfers and 54 newcomers to Indiana. But guess what they had in common? You talked about Rourke, MAC Player of the Year, leading wide receiver, Elijah Surratt. Where's he from? Yep.
James Madison,
transfer. Leading running back, Justice Ellison. Where's he from?
Wake Forest. I wrote all this stuff down, so if you want to ask me all of them, I got them.
Well, good. You got it all. How about the best quarterback, D'Angelo Pons?
He was also a James Madison guy.
A freshman All-American at James Madison. Like, he knew exactly what he was. Their best D lineman, Mikhail Kamara, number six, yep. Who's an absolute freak animal, led the Big Ten in sacks. Well, at JMU, he had 7.5 sacks. He knew exactly what he was getting. So now here's the thing moving forward, Brent. I'll ask you this. Rhett Lashley said something low-key that was really, really important that I don't think a lot of people picked up on that you need to make sure you listen to. He said, we knew what kind of guy they were. That's transfer portal. You don't know those kids all the time, and you don't know why they went in the transfer portal. But if you know what kind of kid they are, you know what kind of heart they have, you know what kind of work ethic they have, you're way more likely to succeed. So you're not going to have that at JMU anymore. You're not going to have that at Miami. The years go by and the relationships. So FSU comes to mind, like 1 year away from that. So is this a sustainable model, or do you think high school recruiting still has to be the main model?
It has to be. But it also, if you get the right quarterback, like that kind of solves coach and quarterback kind of solves a lot of those problems. But I think one of the things that if you look at Indiana's defense, you talked about the experience, but also the fact that you don't really see minuses. They have zero players, by the way, who have a PFF grade less than 60. So 60 is kind of the baseline. They have zero who have less than that. So it's all at least average to then above average and or elite players. And when you minimize the minuses, you minimize the inconsistencies of a team. Now, one thing you talked about was their schedule. I think this is something that conferences are going to have to do, because in actuality, they played what could have been a good schedule, because you had Michigan, you had Washington, you had the two teams that were in the national championship game a year ago, but they fell off the cliff from there. So I think conferences are going to have to, much like the NFL, give you a first place schedule or a last place type schedule thing year in, year out, where that changes. I think that could be something that you see moving forward.
Yeah. And when you watch Indiana, when they play on schedule, like, they're really good, and they their system is good. Their players are good. The upper elite players, they don't have. And that's probably the thing that will be interesting to watch against Notre Dame. Do they get beat up? Do they get exposed? Or can they stay in rhythm and stay on schedule? Because when they stay in rhythm, and listen, plus 15 on the turnover margin, number one in the country. Like, that's not a surprise. It's one of the best, and there's a reason when you don't turn the football over, good things happen. But not having those minuses, I think, are right. But I still think the high school recruiting is the lifeline to your program. Those guys being able to bring them in and develop them is so huge. And it's been honestly the only way to do it. The greatest teams in all of college football had elite high school recruiting. It's just it. Like, yes, you can Google it. Like, Google it, and that was the ticket, right, Joe? But the thing is, now Lane Kiffin, you know, came in and bought a defensive line and a defense and an O-line and some guys. Cignetti and company went to JMU and did the transfer portal. We just talked to Rhett Lashley, who had success with the transfer portal. So you're seeing it in college football have a little bit more success. So it'll be interesting to watch the blending in the future and what's the right recipe, because again, you got to get in the end, everybody doing this, and you got to have great leadership. And the only way to do that is for it to be a player-led team, to have great individuals that lead the team. And that's hard to find without knowing who they are and recruiting them and developing them.
And obviously they got the national spotlight game one, first game of the 12-team playoff is them and Notre Dame on Friday night. So everybody's going to be watching. It's not like the next day where there's, you know, three in a row and it's a Saturday and people might come in and out or something like that. No, it's Friday night. Everybody's going to be tuned in for that one, because they still, at least for the most part, slowed Ohio State's running game in the one loss. Notre Dame is obviously a run heavy team.
Isn't it fair to say that everybody slowed Ohio State's running game? I mean, pretty much.
I think you're right.
I
think you're right. And somebody asked me today, Ohio State versus Tennessee. And my answer was, if Ohio State doesn't play aggressive or plays like they did against Michigan from a play calling standpoint, Tennessee beats them.
Yeah. Well, the cool thing is, we still got some more
time. We'll get to look at that next week.
We'll get that next week. We'll do some film, which would be cool. Brent can bring some more PFF grades like he just broke out with Indiana. I like that. I like hearing that kind of stuff, because I think it's kind of cool, because you see the metrics and the numbers, and a lot of times you watch the tape, and it's really cool to put them together, you know, and and to see the weaknesses. But we are here. We're on the precipice. We'll get back at it next week. We got Dan Lanning. I screwed that up. My apologies to all. I was texting back and forth with Dan, and Dan, we agreed to have him on at 9:30, and I just assumed 9:30 p.m. because that's 6:30 West Coast. Dan meant 9:30 a.m. So he called me this morning, and I was like, oh, crud.
Which means he was up and at him, by the way, at 6:30 a.m. Oh,
and that's not a shock. That's not a shock at all with Dan. I mean, he's an absolute psycho. And you know me, I mean that in the greatest compliment possible. Like, mastermind, and just done such a great job of taking over and leading Oregon. So we'll get him on as well. Maybe some other coaches, but we appreciate y'all as always joining us. Liking our stuff, continuing to watch it, and we'll keep putting out football, because football, specifically college football, is the greatest sport on the planet. And it's almost year-round. And, hey, now we got Rich Rodriguez back at West Virginia, Scott Frost at UCF, and Bill Belichick going to North Carolina. So we live in a crazy time in a crazy world. So appreciate y'all.